Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Dedicated to Henry Farman. In the year of the primal thought, to the dawn of terrestrial birth, man mastered the mammoth and horse. Man was the lord of the earth. He made him an olive skin from the heart of an olive tree. He compassed the earth therein, and man was the lord of the sea. He controlled the vigorous steam, he harnessed the lightning for hire. He drove the celestial team, and man was the lord.
Good morning, good afternoon, good something, good wherever, good whomever. This is Alan Averill. This is episode 73 of Agitators Anonymous. How are we all doing? Well, now, it is one day after our first gig, our first return gig back in London. And that's kind of, I suppose, the place to start, the place for the podcast to inhabit this time around. It makes the most sense, considering that's what I've spent an awful lot of time talking about for the last, however long it's been, the last few decades. So I suppose that is what this podcast will be about. How did we prepare? What songs did we choose? How was the traveling? How were the restrictions? How was the crowd? All of these kind of things I'm going to mull over for the next while. Firstly, I have to say that I would like to say that it would look like my dire predictions of Dublin being closed until next April seem to have been incorrect, or at least not my predictions, but my contemplations, my analysis of the information at the time. There was a few tweets going round and a few leaked pieces of information. And in truth, of course, nothing has quite been lifted yet. And of course, we've been told a litany of lies for the last however many months. So I will keep my ammunition dry, as they say, or before I make a judgment on all of those kind of things. But, you know, this might mean or might not mean something to you if you're living outside of Ireland, but it would seem that the sight of thousands of sports fans on the streets drinking with none of the restrictions, rules, distancing, masks, blah, 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 singing, seemed to have been the straw that broke the cultural camel's back in Ireland, as there was no provision made at the time for this sight, which we could all feast our eyes upon, at least around the corner from where I live. I was greeted with hundreds of Cork fans in the street, if not thousands. And it just made a mockery of the entire concept that no one is allowed to do the same thing for a gig, etc. Now, of course, there is a difference between, as I talked about in episode 71, having a gig outside or in a tent, and or instead of being allowed inside. Those are, of course, two different things, but it seemed that the optics of that scenario of 50,000 sports fans being allowed to mill around in the street sort of were something that they couldn't quite keep a lid on. And so the government here, it would appear, has laid some claim to all restrictions being lifted by October the 22nd. So I will hold my hand up and say that at the time when I got that information, at the time when it looked like that could be the scenario, and it did make sense that they would push through the autumn flu season, you know, kind of like take Christmas cautiously, the new year, and then shoot for the reopening of St. Patrick's Day, which I don't really think many people realize outside of Ireland, but this is a huge economic boon for the country. We usually have hundreds of thousands of tourists spilling into the country, bringing in a lot of money. And on some level, it did make sense that the government was going to shoot for shortly after that. Now, of course, things might still change. We do know that the nature of this whole emergency is that things can change very quickly. But the mood in the country definitely seems to have changed a bit. And the rhetoric now is becoming like, look it. We've got to change all this and give it up. And so October 22nd is the day where the government is stating that all these restrictions, well, at least a moderate, no, not a moderate, let's just say. If the roadmap is to be believed, then yes, people can look at nightclubs and gigs and all that kind of thing. So if you're outside of Ireland, I think one thing that will be made abundantly clear to you is that every country is moving at different speeds right now, which makes a mockery of the concept of a European Union, which we were, of course, being sold throughout our adult lives, that we all moved in dubstep together, which we clearly do not. Of course, quite a few people have messaged me asking me to discuss what's happening in Australia and New Zealand. I don't really, obviously I don't live there. I'm not an authority on what's going on. I can only talk to the people of my friends down there who are telling me that the place has turned into a hysterically authoritarian, you know, just like literally having a manic episode of authoritarianism. And some of the footage coming out of police just beating demonstrators in the streets. There was a story that had come out which, I mean, needs to be validated, but it would appear to suggest that the police are giving powers to, how can we say, not only open people's devices, but occupy their social media digitally, to have access to every single thing, to make everything that you are online openly transparent. And so therefore, transgression would seem to be out of the question. Now, I don't know if this is true. If it is true, it is one of the most dystopian steps that we've witnessed in the entire 18, 19, 20 months of this whole emergency. And it spells something very, very ominous, that the state can literally just parachute themselves into your online world, especially an online world which you are being encouraged to inhabit solely all of the time, as this is the new gig economy, whatever your online work is. The fact that, of course, look, you know, I don't completely buy all the, oh, were we ever free anyway arguments, or the, oh, was going that way anyway. Seems like to me such a regressive argument and such an intellectually stunted, such a lazy argument to go, hey, look, we're going that way anyway. It's like, so what? As if, you know, of course, that you should hand away everything just because something was taken away, or that there's just no point talking about it anymore. Alan, come on, can you not just live within the new boundaries, the new rules and restrictions? I mean, but this is something else, something of the other. The idea that the state can literally just at the flick of the switch, just occupy and take over your social media. Now, if somebody in Australia, New Zealand maybe wants to get in contact with me, I'm sure there's somebody I could talk to in the podcast about it. Let me know how things are. I mean, I have a bunch of friends who are moving between emotions, moving between opinions. It just seems to me that that country, the antipodes, that Australia and New Zealand are caught in some sort of manic moment. And we seem to be lazily or quietly, with a certain amount of moving out of our I don't think Ireland had a manic moment, all things considered, but we would appear to be moving out of that. So I just thought I should address that off the top of the podcast because, you know, it's not the point of many of the things I'm saying, or not so the point of many of the things I'm saying, but the principle of the podcast is not for me to always kind of go, well, this is my opinion, I'm nailed to it, I'm unable to admit when I maybe overstepped a mark, got something wrong. This is only human. I know people don't really like that anymore. They want everything that you possibly say to be the most accurate representation of everything at all times. But we can get things wrong. And if I was wrong about that and the state is open by October 22nd and gives me a chance to have a bumper Halloween, well then, good for the state, I suppose, for finally realizing the error of their ways and realizing that people need a bit more spice in their lives, or whatever you want to call it. So, I should say that this podcast is sponsored by www.metalblade.com. Use the promo code ALAN in North America and you can get 10% off your order. Go for it. This podcast is also sponsored by Eisenwald Records. Go to www.eisenton.de and .com. Pagan, black metal, post-black metal, all sorts of stuff. Use the promo code ALAN and yeah, you can get free shipping. Yeah, go and take a look at those things. The descriptions will be in the links below. You can follow me on Instagram, nemtiango_primordial. Also, if any of you want to support the show, you can do it for as little as a dollar a month over on my Patreon. I do two podcasts a month, which are different from the ones that are on Agitators. We talk about books. We talk about, there's sometimes rehearsals. There's video footage. There's all sorts of things going on there. Some very interesting and insightful questions from everyone involved. You can go over there and become a patron for, well, little or nothing. Less than a cup of coffee, as is the common parlance or way to explain these things. Somehow everything is measured against the worth of coffee, which must have been also true sometime over the last 400 or 500 years, or would that be tea? I don't know. I'm not much of a tea drinker. Yes, so therefore not a real Irishman. As everyone knows, tea is an obsession of the Irish. I could say we inherited it from the English, but then I might get into some trouble. Who knows? That said, it seems like you don't get into much trouble talking about Irish politics anymore. Once upon a time, could have got you in some rather serious hot water. Well, anyway, what am I talking about? Episode 73, Agitators Anonymous. So, let's talk about the gig. And so, my list of talking points here, I'm going to go through them and sort of try and flesh out what it was like. I will admit and will explain that I'm not a man who's privy to very much to nerves anymore. I don't really get anxious. I get a kind of a feeling of very much a kind of feeling of rising adrenaline, and I get a bit restless. I wouldn't call it anxiety, just you're just waiting. An awful lot of playing in a band is waiting. It's waiting in hotel rooms, it's waiting in vans, it's waiting in airports, and then the interminability of waiting to play. So very much the rest of the guys in the band don't get as wound up as me. They could probably sleep till right about an hour before the gig. Not me. I like to go down early, I like to bed in, I like to look at the merchandise, I like to walk around and talk to the crew. It may sound strange, I suppose, in an age of impersonality, but I like to walk around, introduce myself to every single person who's there, from the security guards, people behind the bar, lighting, sound engineers, stage people. I think it's very important that you shake someone's hand, well, in, you know, within limits of their will and want to do that under these current circumstances. Look them in the eye and say, I'm Alan from Primordial. What's your name? What do you do? How, etc., etc. And it's not because I'm playing the game, because I just think it's a genuinely the right thing to do, that everybody's pulling together. Like I've often described playing a gig as dropping a pebble or a stone into the water and the ripples move out. Now, that first dropping of the stone can be the writing of a riff, the writing of a song, which moves out. But the ripples, as it gets further and further from that initial impact, are the things like the van driver coming to get it, to get us, who this weekend was a sterling chap who regaled us with many, many amazing stories. And, you know, it's good to meet all the promoters and meet everyone. And I think it leaves a good impression because you hear too many stories about rude musicians, people who assume the stance of mini rock star when they haven't deserved it yet, if anyone really does deserve it. But you will often find that the most, some of the most famous people can very often be the most polite, not to place myself in that bracket. You understand, but I think it speaks to a common humanity which we've left behind over the last 20 months, that it is very important to go and introduce yourself to each other. And also, wouldn't my mother be upset with my impoliteness, you say? You probably would be right. So how did we prepare? Well, originally, before the emergency, we had prepared a set, or were preparing a set of 15 or so songs that were rarely played. But in the canon of primordial musical history, whether it's Come the Flood, whether it's Failure's Burden, etc. But after such a long gap, after such a long time off, we kept one or two or three of those. But we just thought, well, after such a long time off, let's go back to two-thirds of the drawing board and let's take some of the, you know, the Gods to the Godless, the Traitor's Gate, the Gallows Hymns, the songs that we've been playing for the last few years, place that template and add two or three more. We were a bit pushed for time with the rehearsals. I mean, no matter how well you plan these things, life gets in the way when you have responsibilities, apparently. I've heard about it. It's called work or a job or something like this. The name and substance eludes me of that job, of the work, or whatever you may say. And so, we picked a couple of different songs. The rehearsing was good. It was important. The gig was important in a way in that it brought us back together into a room. And before you know it, then it feels like, you know, an old glove again as you're about to go back in the ring. But what I hear you ask is, how were the crowd? How were the restrictions? How were the rules? How were those kind of things? Now, I didn't ask, were people asked to show their test? As I understood it, you had to have a proof of vaccination or a test or maybe a rapid antigen test before entering the venue. I'm not going to comment on the insistence of people working at the venue of whether those things are or are not going to happen, or did or did not happen. That's not really the purpose of my commentary here. The idea, I think, is, or at least the principle that comes across to me, is that over the coming years, these rules are going to be arbitrarily enforced. I think it's going to be very much left to venues. It's going to be very much left to the discretion of security guards, of people, of how much X person or Y person cares. Of course, we do live in a litigious society. There's no denying that. And does that mean that there has to be exacting track and trace? I'm not exactly sure. Certainly, I've seen in my experience in Dublin for the last month or so, there are pubs that demand it, ask for it and scan codes, it would seem. And there are other pubs that just do not. And I think that this is going to be how things are. I think over a course of a year or two, booking agents and bands are going to realize, oh, well, that venue is a pain in the ass. That venue isn't. That venue is a bit more relaxed. This venue isn't. And the venues that are not more relaxed are realistically going to get less of the work. They're going to get less of the medium bands. They're going to get less of those, gigs that help their gig economy tick over, because people are going to go, well, they just insist on everything that is unreasonable, so therefore we are going to avoid them. Now, how do agents and venues navigate this? I'm not sure. Especially not if the government is spying on all your correspondence. But how will that transaction work? I think is yet to be discovered. It's a sort of black market conversation, isn't it? Are you going to allow this to run smoothly or are you not? I suppose this depends, also coming back to what I just said, on how your country's level of scrutiny, how strict your country is. I don't think you're going to get away with this in Australia, but I have a feeling you might get away with it in Greece or Croatia or, well, you know, Ukraine or Belgium. Who knows? Just picking some names out of the hat there. Don't be offended if I said your country isn't that strict. You should be happy, fundamentally. So I think it's going to rely on all of those different kind of things. What I did notice and did speaking to the promoters is that it would seem that every attendance is down about 25 to 45, 50%. There was about 500 people there, I think, at our height. Maybe we've pulled 800 people in London. And I think, that, you know, there was a vague air of disappointment at the fact that the crowds were down. But when you think about it, when you put all those things into consideration, it makes sense. And I think it's been reflected everywhere in that the return of some live music hasn't been a washout by any means, but it's been a moderate success. It hasn't been the roaring 20s and it hasn't been, you know, it hasn't been a triumphant return. It's been a quietly moderate success, which sort of makes sense if you're in England or Ireland, because that's kind of somehow what society is, I suppose, on some level, quietly moderate for the most part. And what that means is that I think there was a certain hesitancy among people, a hesitancy to be among strangers again. I have to admit that the night before, down in the Dev, we played with our covers band, and it was my first time to actually be in a packed pub full of people. Hey, Alan, you want a shot? You want to do a shot? Talking to a stranger, shaking hands with people, actually having a conversation with people I didn't know from before. I realized that was something I hadn't done since January or February 2020. I almost forgot the year. That says it's all. And talking to a stranger again was something that I hadn't done in almost 20 months. Now, when you think about it, that's an incredible thing. As a social human species, the idea that you can go throughout almost 2 years without really having a meaningful conversation with somebody you don't know, or even a daft, silly, and not very meaningful conversation with somebody you do not know, or even a conversation with somebody of the opposite sex, or whatever it is. The idea that that has been removed is obviously something I've talked about in podcasts before. But the idea that, oh, I'm here, I'm here, I'm thrown into the mix. I felt personally a great joy at that, a great relief. It made me quite happy on a very simplistic level, I suppose. Wow, did I really say that? Was that a sentence I just said? Well, I was thrown there because the computer went into freeze mode, so I think my brain also went into freeze mode. Let me qualify that. To see people enjoying themselves, smiles on people's faces, people who obviously hadn't met up in months, who were actually there as well for the first time, socializing with other people, and then to watch people lose their shit while we played Venom and Slayer and Death and all these other covers, flinging themselves around. We ended up with some of the guys from Hellripper on stage to sing some G.G. Allin. There was Misfits was going down. All sorts of stuff was going down. To see broad grins on people's faces, drinks being delivered to the stage. The idea again that you were up on you were up there sweating it out. And again, the stress and pressure, of course, in a small way of even just playing a few covers felt 3, 4, 5 times redoubled over than normal, where it would have been I get my bass up here, tune up. And I did feel the weight of like, oh, here you are doing what you're doing again. And I have to admit the last 20 minutes, I sort of ran out of steam. And what should have been quite normal, I ran out of steam. The voice was like, ugh, what are you doing, you middle-aged man? Get off this stage and stop sweating. But it was great. It was a really worthwhile experience. And of course, it was typical of my attitude to these things that I thought, I'll do 2 gigs in 2 days and bite off a bit of bit more of the, you know, let's call it the weekend than I could probably chew. But at the same time, did it make me feel anxious? No. No, it didn't make me feel nervous to be around strangers. Not at all. Not at all. Not even for a moment did I have a second thought about stepping into the pub. I was just apprehensive about playing. A bit anxious to get going, to play. To make sure I didn't make too many mistakes, to hold on to my voice, all of these kind of things. But as for being anxious to be around sweaty, stinking strangers, then no. I've said it before in the podcast. We can't live our lives in fear, or else, you know, we wouldn't cross the road. We wouldn't get out of bed. We wouldn't leave our houses, which some may say is the plan. Hey, Australia. But yeah, there was no anxiety for me. There was an anxiety, to be honest, about losing or not losing my voice the next day, because deciding to sing 28 covers and then sing again for, 90 minutes, 100 minutes the next day can be a pretty heavy thing. But I tried to channel my inner Frank Brennan. I don't know if any of you guys are familiar with the Irish band Morning Beloveth. Arguably, in my opinion, my favourite Irish band ever, if not the greatest Irish band ever. Or, well, maybe. Possibly, as they say. Frank Brennan, one of the greatest natural singers. I will give him that accolade. I have ever stood beside in my life or sat beside at the kitchen table and drank whiskey with him and listened to him sing, as many of you will know. He just said to me, Avril, the biggest thing about you is you worry too much, and worrying will make you lose your voice. Sorry, Frank, for doing your voice there. I will owe you a drink the next time I see you. But, you know, he's right. The biggest thing that makes you lose your voice is worrying about losing your voice. Of course, it's also singing along to Back in Black at 6 a.m. on the tour bus, drinking straight whiskey and then having to wake up 6 hours later and do a sound check. That doesn't help also, which is something I do less and less of as I get older. You will be happy to know I was tucked up in my labba, which is Irish for bed, at about 2 a.m. after the gig on the Saturday. Day Sauron, a bit more Irish there for you. Don't scream at me if that was wrong. Let's just pluck that out of the ether. The Irish ether. Someone can have that as a name for a Celtic dance troupe if they wish. And so his attitude was always, Avril, you're worrying too much. And he'd just say, have a shot, have a Jägermeister, have a glass of wine, calm down, stop thinking about it. And he's right. Once you power through that for a song, it's almost like an elastic band. Now, of course, you can pull that elastic band too far and it can break. But the reality is, if you trust in the fact that your voice is going to rebound, 95% of the time it will. Now, of course, there is the time when you've pushed it too far and your voice, instead of going, oh, just goes, ugh, and just you realize, oh, I'm in trouble. But the more you worry, the more you're in trouble. And of course, the more that you drink and the more you carry on, the greater the hangover, the greater the blues, the more less you sleep, the shittier food you eat, all contribute to that feeling of impending doom, which is, I'm going to lose my voice. I didn't, thankfully. I figured one line into the first song, I figured, I have this. And so how was it to view the crowd? To see the relief on people's faces, I could see there was quite a lot of emotion in the room. I myself probably got a little bit carried away with some of the stage banter, slagging off the crowd, asking them all, did they want a fight? Mocking a few English and Irish stereotypes in the process. But I think, considering the circumstances of where we are or where we were after 20 months, I think a little bit of giddiness was allowed. And that's not a word you usually associate with me. So I could sense there was, of course, a hesitance among the crowd. There's a hesitancy among some people who I think we've lost forever, who aren't going to come back to coming to see a show again. They are, they're happy. Well, let's not say they're happy, but they've going to be there. They prefer, they've grown accustomed now to, they'll watch the stream. They'll invite a few friends around, sit and have a few beers, play a few Xboxes, watch the stream, watch it on YouTube. They don't want to be in a sweaty, stinky room with other people. Again, that's not what they want. And so I think we've lost a percentage of people. There's also a percentage of people who will never regain their social composure. They've been pushed from the ledge, and I think the state has to take some responsibility for ruining their ability to be human with other humans again. And I don't know how that is quantified or measured, but I think that is a percentage of people who will just never regain their social footing again. And those people, I guess, were absent because there wasn't really anywhere to go. There wasn't really a... If you were anxious or you were feeling worried about what was or wasn't, or, you know, I suppose you're a bit worried about being inside a room, a sweating, breathing human beings, there was nowhere to go. There was no little safe space that was cordoned off or all of those things. You were just in amongst the people. I didn't see anybody in the crowd wearing masks. And this was not mandated. While we saw at Psycho Las Vegas people in a change of... we can see across America, it would seem that, in the same week that the Americans threw in the towel up in Afghanistan. Oh, and my Afghanistan podcast is coming. I'm preparing it. It's taking quite a while because this is something I'm going to have to write down and put some proper study into and make some proper notes because I don't want to fuck it up and just speak off the cuff about something quite so serious with such historical resonance. But I'm working on it. You can expect that, I think, in the next podcast. It's a fascinating and interesting country. And, you know, America was just repeating the same mistakes that many people had before gone and done before them. But you saw, wow, what a segue. But you saw how they're, you know, the same week the administration in the USA decided to just, yeah, mandate some new mask mandates. And so they just told people in Psycho Las Vegas, no, you all have to wear them inside now. This was not London. And like I said, as soon as you came out of Camden Town Tube Station, I just stood there for a minute with my guitar and my bags and just went, wow, look at this. Just all sorts of people around, to see punks on the streets, to see, you know, guys wearing, you know, with huge hair, wearing capes and makeup on their way to some sort of crazy party or other somewhere, to see, drag queens, to see a band playing, busking in the street, people standing around them, dancing. It was just like, oh, wow. Yeah, this was life. This was life before. And it was really vibrant, and really there was a lot of energy in the air. And it just sort of, we looked at each other, the three guys from the covers band, you know, me, Shawnee and Johnny, just went, ah, oh, yeah, remember this. And it sort of gave me a great sense of calm. Okay, it was annoying carrying a huge, big, heavy guitar with me, you know, which I've added wheels to the case in an act of incredible foresight and laziness at the same time. But it was very, very gratifying. It was very, very human to see all these people out on the streets. So what would we call it? We would call it a, not a triumphant return, not a washout, a moderate success, not a middling success. Let's call it, on a success rating, maybe a 7 out of 10. Of course, the gig, I think, was better than that. There was a few bumpy mistakes. There was a few times when I had to look at a sheet on the ground to remember what the first word of a song was. But by and large, we sounded pretty tight, pretty good, pretty together. There was lots of grins and smiles between us for the evening. And then it was really nice to come back into the backstage and think to yourself, one of the things that always is important to me from playing for a weekend or being away is that you come back and you have a sense of fulfillment, kind of like as if you've been sent behind enemy lines to do for a secret mission. That's how I tell my teenage version of myself. And you've come back and you've achieved that. And it is a really rewarding feeling. This was a rewarding feeling. The rewarding feeling of seeing people you haven't seen, hanging out with old friends in the backstage like you hadn't missed a beat, hanging out with the other bands, the banter, the mocking, the slagging. You realize, oh yeah, this is what we do. This is what we're supposed to be doing. That was a great feeling of relief. Now, admittedly, the party that raged afterwards, I decided to opt out from. And having had two gigs in a weekend, which normally wouldn't really faze me that much, I felt like I'd been hit by a train on Monday. Or at least maybe not a train, maybe like, you know, one of those small trains that wends its way around a theme park that I just happened to be standing in the way of, and it ran into the back of my legs. And, you know, that kind of level pain. Not full on, you know. Anyway, what am I talking about? Yeah, that's how I felt. I felt quite middle-aged, and it's hardly surprising, really, because you're doing a whole lot of movements, carrying, singing, and you know, you're using all of the muscles required to sing and all this kind of stuff, which you haven't used properly in ages. So yeah, of course your chest hurts. So it's either that or you're having a stroke, one or the other. So what would be my real takeaways from this weekend? Rate my takeaway. It would be that it felt like I said, putting on old gloves that you haven't put on again for a while and getting into the ring. It felt, you weren't quite match fit or, you know, fight fit, but it felt like, yeah, this is what we do. It felt like a return to something. Now, does it make me feel more positive for the future? It remains to be seen. It really remains to be seen. Do we lurch back into forms of restriction? I mean, if anything, the last 20 months has told us is that it's possible. Anything is possible. I guess we just have to wait and see country to country if they open up and allow people to do the same thing as they were allowed to do in London last Saturday. You know, it seems to me that the same event in Germany is not quite... do you need an antigen test, a PCR test? Didn't they change from one to the other? There seems to be a constant chopping and changing of trying to deal with new rules and restrictions. It shows that it can be done. It shows that people will show up. Of course, as I said, there is hesitancy. And I don't blame anyone for hesitancy on any level, really, because, you know, people have been inside their homes. They have been not been socializing. They've not been out doing the things they were used to normally doing. And so these do have an impact on your conscience. They have an impact on your, well, not your conscience, but they have an impact on your levels of anxiety, I suppose, for some people, because on the day of the show, are they going to go or they're not going to go? And they won't have bought tickets in advance, which is another thing that's going to be, you know, a rather mundane thing, but a rather telling thing is people, I think, are going to buy less tickets in advance and show up on the day because they don't know what restrictions might have changed on that day. And so they're going to leave it till the day. And then on that day, they may feel, I don't want to leave my house, because they've been conditioned to that. So I think that the whole industry and scene is going to have to work on a slightly reduced capacity when it comes to expectation, when it comes to finances, all of these kind of things. I think that what bands used to be paid 3, 4, 5 years ago is going to have to come down to meet some new considerations. And that is, as I said, that there is going to be a sort of slow opening. It's not going to be, people have talked to me about the Roaring Twenties and all that kind of thing. The Roaring Twenties was only the Roaring Twenties for a minority of people. For the majority of people, it wasn't that roaring. But my takeaway is that the whole scenario, the whole weekend was a success, and it can be replicated throughout Europe. I don't see any reason why not. The only reasons why not will be to do with, I think, levels of authoritarianism or restriction or the unwillingness of agents of power, state, to let go of the reins and give people their social society back or their musical culture back. That will be, for me, the main reasons. So these will differ from country to country. You can see, you know, Holland is doing things differently to Belgium and all this kind of stuff. So should you be worried about going to gigs and entering the fray? I would say no. I would say that throughout our lives, we've had to conquer some kind of fears or other, or anxieties about one thing or the next. It's just something we have to do. And this is no different. And that life, you know, I mean, without all sounding like some sort of self-help manual, but life slips by a day at a time. And we've allowed to, you know, 20 months of it to slip by without engaging in these things with each other, the sense of musical communion, the sense of artistic and emotional communion that is involved in, for example, playing a gig. And we can't allow these things to simply die off, because once a circuit is broken, maybe they are broken for good. So If it sounds like I'm a bit more positive, I suppose it is because I am a little bit more positive. Of course, it was like a pressure valve for me. It was like releasing some energy. It was like getting back to the thing that you know. And I suppose the thing that not only you know, but you are meant to do. That's how you feel, in that you are back on the place where you make the most sense, which is on that stage playing that music. And that hasn't changed. But does it assuage some of my negative fears? Yes and no. Yes and no. I will be the first to say that, yeah, I did come back feeling, you know, my friend Aaron from Crew Coalition, who should be on the podcast actually for an interview soon enough to discuss the music industry, said, you know, do you feel a bit more positive about the future? And I said, well, in terms of what we are, yeah, I do. And I'm going to float along on that tiny little cloud for a little while longer, but fully aware that at any moment, restrictions and rules and all these kind of things can change. And who knows what may happen. But I just thought that episode 73, considering how much I've talked about live music and gigs and about return to the stage, should just be a sort of a look at how it all went, about, you know, a little dip into the atmosphere of the gig. But I will say that it was great to see joy on people's faces again. The idea that people were singing along with the words and all that kind of thing. Yeah, yeah. I mean, things we took for granted. And that's if that's one of the biggest takeaways of the last 20 months and we do return to some form of normality, if one of those things is that we begin to fall in love again with all the things that we that were taken from us or that were handed over, and as they come back to us, then that will be a great thing. So my advice would be, try and overcome your hesitancy and try and grab hold of the reins of being human again and go out. Go to a gig. If you feel you want to stand in the crowd with a mask on, do it. If that makes you somehow feel more comfortable, but still go and take part in it within real life, not just this other life that we have online. Okay, Agitators Anonymous, my friends, episode 73 was just a discussion about the gig, the great gig in the sky, and how it went. And so the next podcast, I think, there'll be a few interviews coming up. There'll be one, the one about the great podcast about Afghanistan. And maybe I got to start resurrecting all the ones I didn't finish that I promised I was going to do before. The Knights Templar, Alan Turing, all these kind of things. And put a bit more, what shall we call it? Put my shoulder to the wheel a little bit more. And study up on a few more interesting podcasts that aren't just random rambles. But I thought this one should be. All right, my friends. Episode 73, Agitators Anonymous. Over and out.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.